This podcast is intended for mature audiences only. It is important to note that the opinions expressed here do not necessarily represent the views of Classic City Crime Podcast or Cameron J. All persons are ultimately innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome, welcome, welcome back to Classic City Crime. I'm Cameron J. And I want to begin this episode by saying how much I appreciate each and every one of you for tuning in. You know, as I've always told you, this work is never easy. Asking people to divulge some of the most tragic moments in their lives in such deep detail has to be quite difficult, and I still believe, as I always have, that by telling these stories, by remembering and honoring the victims, and by telling of what we know about the investigation all these years later, we will not only preserve the memory of Robbie and Janelle forever, but perhaps we might compel those with new information left unspoken all those years ago to come forward and have their truths heard. As we move through this content together, please email me at classiccitycrime@gmail.com. And if you discover that you have something that law enforcement needs to see immediately, I encourage you to reach out to the Athens-Clarke County Police Department's Detective Gary Mitchell. That phone number is 762-400-7101. Now with that, let us recenter on the story of Robbie Bryant and Janelle Helms for part two of this series. The story of Robbie and Janelle as an item, a couple, began right here in Athens. As Janelle's friend Nissa recalls, Janelle was rather excited about coming to the Classic City. She was looking for that new start that I know I was looking for nearly a decade ago, and I'm sure many of you were looking for that, too.
Like, when she first went, I think she was ready to have a change in her life after being in the Navy, and she was just ready for that. She was ready to go to college. She was ready for that time in her life to start. You know, several of us had been in college for a couple of years, so I think she felt kind of like, oh, you know, this is something I'm missing, and she was always very intellectual, very smart, and loved learning. I just think she was ready. She was ready for that time in her life, ready to go to school. Yeah, she was happy about it.
It was here, near the campus of the University of Georgia, and in a town that bustles with a lively music and art scene, that Robbie and Janelle would find one another, having shared interests and hobbies. Marna was friends of both Robbie and Janelle, and as she puts it, the two were dreamers. They clearly bounced ideas about the future off of one another, an indication, perhaps, that they were in this for the long haul.
They were such a good match, because he would get really, really focused on things, and she would pull him out of that focus and remind him he had the rest of his life, too. He couldn't just spend it all focused on this one point. And the plans that they would make, they would just riff off of each other with you. How they were going to build their dojo, and how they were going to design it, how they were going to decorate it, what sort of, you know, people they were looking to bring into it. So they very much were supportive of each other. I mean, all relationships have squabbles, but they always worked through the tensions between them.
Chuck Jones, who you heard from in episode one, also spoke to a relationship that he saw between his two friends. One that, like all of our relationships, has its ups and downs, yet they remain together in good times and bad.
You know, everything that I ever saw, I mean, they always had a good relationship. I didn't see anything too crazy out of sorts. But again, you know, talking with some of the friends, I mean, it's like any other relationship at that time, you know, at that age. You know, there was definitely a little bit of strife back and forth, just like any other young couple would have. Then, of course, she became pregnant, you know, money and all these other things kind of come up and come into play with these sorts of things, especially when you're, you know, in your early 20s, that sort of thing. So otherwise, you know, I never saw them have too many problems, you know, outside of, you know, the occasional just bit of argument, but that's about it. So.
But perhaps what really bonded Janelle and Robbie together was their shared interest in gaming. And by gaming, I don't mean Monopoly or A Knight of Uno. No, instead, I mean an art that was really taking form here in the 90s. Live-action role-playing and games like Dungeons and Dragons. I first asked Sean Fannin to explain what Dungeons and Dragons was for all of you.
It's playing pretend with rules is one of the famous phrases that's used. But at this point, so many people have heard of Dungeons and Dragons. I mean, WotC just put out a massive announcement about Dungeons and Dragons today that made national news. So it's a much more well-known phenomenon than it used to be back in the day. It is role-playing. It is, you know, pretending to be heroic adventurers. One person takes on the role of the dungeon master or the storyteller or the game master or whichever term that you prefer. And everybody else gets to take on a character within that space. And whether it's at the table or possibly live standing up in costume, but one way or another, you immerse yourself in the character and you get to play out what the character does in response to whatever scenarios or situations that the storyteller or game master presents. The thing is, instead of when we were little kids running around, bang, bang, I got you. No, you didn't. You missed. Now we have rules. We have dice. We have stats on our sheets that indicate what our characters are good and not good at. And that enables us to have a better sense of, you know, who was able to accomplish what. What surprises most people about these games is that they are primarily cooperative instead of competitive. You are not playing Monopoly where one person is trying to bankrupt everyone else. You are all striving for the same goal. And even the game master is part of that. Their job is to provide an entertaining challenge. They're not trying to win. They don't gain a victory by defeating your group. They gain satisfaction from creating an experience much like a director of a movie or play might. If they've crafted a good stage and a good story that the actors have inhabited and the audience has appreciated, the players get to be both the actors and the audience in that regard, where the game master is concerned. So it still ends up being a cooperative experience where at the end, everyone goes, wow, that was cool and we had a good time. And that was really at the heart of what our group was about. Now, at the same time, you know, as the name Athens or Time Lords might tell you, there was also the movies and the television series and all the different science fiction and fantasy interests as well. And all those were also very much a part of the kinds of things that we all did as a group. We'd go on movie outings together and get together for television viewings and things like that. It was just a big social group. And it was very much made up of both students and local residents. That was the other thing that was interesting. We were lucky that the university was very open about that. They liked having a community aspect to the social things that were done on campus. So there was plenty of room and welcoming for anybody that wanted to participate, whether they were a student or not, as long as it was a majority student population group, which it always was by far.
But you see, it wasn't just Dungeons and Dragons. No, Sean was the leader of quite the community here in Athens. One that would fill Robbie and Janelle's life with such joy.
I became very involved with an organization first known as the Athens Area Time Lords, and that group evolved into what we came to know as Altered Reality or Alternate Reality Continuum or ARC, and we were the big epic gaming geek nerd, you have it, club on the University of Georgia campus. And it could be said that I was kind of the captain of the nerds more often than not. And as a matter of additional bona fides, if you were to look up my name in Wikipedia, you would find an entry that would pretty much establish that I went on to have a rather extensive career as a writer and designer in the tabletop role-playing game industry. And I began that career in earnest while I was at University of Georgia. And I ran all kinds of games, big epic events. I organized literally hundreds of us sometimes into these grandiose schemes where we would run around with rattan practice swords called shinai blades or boffer weapons, and we would dress up in costume and do all of those crazy wonderful things.
And I don't know about you, but it all sounds really exciting to me. If it's not clear by now, I've just got to say, Robbie and Janelle seem to lead very interesting lives. Some friends described them and their close circles as living as part of what some people in the South might call a, quote, fringe group of society. But there were other happenings at play in this friend group. Nothing nefarious, I'd say, but certainly something that would garner the attention of investigators after Robbie and Janelle's deaths.
But Janelle and I were lovers. And were incredibly close at the time that she was murdered. And so it hit me 10 times harder than anybody realized, because very, very few people knew we had that relationship.
Don't go anywhere. This explosive interview, being told here for the very first time, is up next. We'll be right back. In 2001, University of Georgia School of Law student Tara Louise Baker was murdered in her East Athens, Georgia home. For over two decades, her family and friends have remained hopeful that one day someone will be brought to justice. Today, they still search for the truth as to who killed Tara and why. Be sure to tune in to Classic City Crimes Season 1 wherever you get your podcasts for a 25-episode journey that was recorded in real time. In that series, we not only tell Tara's story, but we honor her life through the stories of her family and her friends. Together, let's continue to believe in justice for Tara. Let's return now, though, to the story of Robbie and Janelle. Relationships. They are indeed so complicated, aren't they? I mean, anyone who knows me knows that I've had my fair share of troubles there. But I truly believe that relationships that some might call different are much more difficult to work through here in the South. For example, up until recent years, I struggled deeply with the fact that I was gay. And I'm grateful, by the way, to those of you listening who have been an important part of my healing journey towards self-acceptance and self-love. But my story, of course, is not one of isolation. It is the reality experienced by LGBTQ people across the country. It's a reality that is experienced by anyone who strays from the traditional norms set by society, and anyone who might challenge that traditional definition of a relationship as one person made for one other person, one man, one woman, you get the picture. And you might be wondering, how does all of this fit into the story of Robbie and Janelle's murder? Well, let's talk about it. It's important to note before we go any further that I am choosing to share this with the permission of their daughter, Kelsey. I think it's going to help us better understand their lives. Sean Fannin has told us of his love for gaming, yes, but when you ask him to talk about Janelle Helms, and you'll hear this, his voice changes. You hear a sense of loss and perhaps a deep love for the woman no longer here.
Janelle. I fell head over heels for Janelle the moment I met her. Absolutely drop dead gorgeous, glorious mane of brunette hair, great big smile, bodacious and vivacious and absolutely no fear at all. I mean, about nothing. She was just powerful presence. We fought like cats and dogs very frequently. She very early on, you know, took on leadership roles within the group, and there were frequently times when we would butt heads over, you know, how to do things or how things should go or whatever. And she would tease me mercilessly. She was one of the ones that first started with my well-known nickname, which was the ego that ate Athens, because there was this whole thing
that
I was known as the ego that ate Athens, because I was Mr. you know, hey everybody, come follow me, we'll do all the things. And she was always one of the ones in the background, making sure to puncture holes in my balloon and make sure I didn't get my head too quite big.
We all need that.
Yeah, and she was very good at it. And there was no doubt in anyone's mind that I was utterly smitten with her.
You see, Sean and Janelle, prior to her death, had a relationship that had gone much farther than just friends, he says, and I'm going to let him take it from there.
There's a lot that can be said and will be said that others who were there at the time know this truth, but others don't, and will probably find a bit of it shocking. It's been long enough, and I talked extensively with Kelsey before coming on with you, because she had the right to say whether or not this was something she wanted shared and known, and she does. And so with her permission, something that has been kept very private for all these years can now be said, and that is that Janelle and I were lovers and were incredibly close at the time that she was murdered. And so it hit me 10 times harder than anybody realized, because very, very few people knew we had that relationship. It was a non-ethical, non-monogamy situation, cheating, if you will. She was married to Robbie, and I was married to Cheryl. And so, yeah, it was something that was illicit. And so we were exploring what that meant for us and trying to decide what that was going to mean for us when she died. And that put a whole different spin on the entire experience.
And it certainly happens, right? You might be wondering, did Robbie know about this? Well, here's what he had to say.
I do not believe that Robbie knew. Now, okay, that's not to say he did not know. It's possible that Janelle had talked to him about it. But I was not aware that Robbie knew. So, yes, I also got to carry that guilt as well. Believe me when I tell you that I did and I have. But there it is.
And I've learned in my work that perhaps this type of situation was not just unique to Janelle, but was also something Robbie had experienced too. But it wasn't Sean alone, however. We know that Janelle had an infectious personality that would cause anyone around her to want to get to know her and to love her. And the next person you're going to hear about is the exact reason why we're covering this case together in the first place. Late one night, I was going through the list of 40 unsolved homicides in Athens, Georgia, since 1969. I was Googling the names, looking for people to contact, and when I got to the case of Robbie and Janelle, there really wasn't much to be found, that is, until I found a Reddit post made by Marna, whom you've already heard from several times. The title of the post urgently saying, quote, "Please cover my friend's murder." I emailed Marna, and very shortly after, she contacted me back, ready to talk. It was through that conversation with her that I grew to learn of a woman named Molly, a close friend of Janelle's who would, after their murder actually, be one of the fiercest advocates for justice for both Janelle and Robbie. Unfortunately, that's something she'll never be able to realize this side of heaven, having lost a battle with sickness, get this, just weeks, a short time before I found that Reddit post. Oh, how I wish she was here to discuss her findings and her work with all of you. And it's that work that leads me to dedicate this episode to her. But I also learned through Marna that Molly had feelings for Janelle that closely resembled the feelings Sean had for her. It was something Molly was never shy about, which is why I'm choosing to share Marna's account of their close relationship with all of you.
Molly is a wonderful lady, and I'm very, I spoke to you right after she passed, so
right.
I was still pretty torn up by that. But she was madly in love with Janelle. She, Molly was very much an out lesbian. She, made no secret of that. She was in love with Janelle, but Janelle was also her best friend, and she was Janelle's best friend. So there was that whole dynamic between them at all times. Janelle was bisexual. She was friends with Molly more than she was in love with Molly. She was in love with Robbie. Mm-hmm. So that's where the triangle came into it. But after the murder, Molly just never quite recovered from that. That's what made her go into looking at becoming a paralegal with the hopes of going to law school and hopefully being able to find what had happened, to find a way to prove what had happened, because, we all know. But
sure.
She wanted to find a way to prove it and to bring about justice for them. There was a part of Molly that stopped at that point in time and never moved past it. And she devoted her entire life to finding out who did it, finding the proof that the prosecutors needed to actually take it to court. She was willing to do anything that it took to do that. And then when her possibility of going into the legal field got derailed by some well-timed lies, she took her training as a paralegal and would spend days in law libraries and in the courthouse trying to figure out anything she could to be the evidence needed to bring this to court.
And again, I just want to say thank you, Molly, for laying a foundation for the work we're all doing here today together. As my research assistant, Elizabeth DeRusso, said, and by the way, Elizabeth knew Molly too, such a small world. Quote, "I wish Molly could see all of this." I share that sentiment. So you might be wondering, why, Cameron, are you choosing to share all of these intimate details? Well, here's why. I think they're key in helping us understand every aspect of Robbie and Janelle's lives. And as any investigator and criminologist might tell you, understanding the victimology, yes, their lives, their hobbies, their involvements, their work, all of these things come together to help us understand what might have happened to them, more importantly, who could be involved. I also believe that these details are important in understanding why the case of Robbie Bryant and Janelle Helms didn't get much attention, at least locally, as you'll find out later. Could that be because they weren't what many people would consider the traditional 20-somethings. They weren't the University of Georgia students putting a campus on edge. They enjoyed games that many folks, including police, did not understand. And their lifestyles, their relationships, were ones that challenged the societal norms of the times. Perhaps their friend Marna can tell you what I'm trying to explain best.
At the time they died, they were not rich enough to attract media attention. They were just another young couple living in a bad section of Athens, and it caught up with them.
But here's the one thing. Even in the midst of their busy lives of role-playing games, Knights of Dungeons and Dragons, and the romantic interests between both victims and some of their friends, all of that seemingly less important when it came to be found out that Janelle was pregnant, and she and Robbie welcomed their baby girl, Kelsey, You see, Kelsey became the light of their lives, and she was welcomed by her doting parents in 1993. Sean Fannin.
There could have been no two more doting parents. They adored Kelsey, absolutely. Robbie was this goofy, giddy epitome of, you know, a silly, loving dad. And Janelle was strong, you know, very, very loving, effective mother. First of all, the fact that she was so young, there was such strength in her. But it was very early on in their lives, and they were, it really did kind of throw them for a loop, and they were, you know, desperately trying to figure out how to kind of step back and rebuild and figure out what their course needed to be. And in a huge part because they wanted to build a good life for themselves and their child. They realized we need to get serious. We need to take our strengths and, you know, go forward. And the only way we're going to do that is taking charge of our own destiny instead of letting other people try to be in charge of them.
Chuck Jones echoes these sentiments about the birth of baby Kelsey.
I mean, I think they were happy. I don't think it was, you know, obviously it was, I don't know that it was necessarily planned, but I think, you know, kind of once the shock kind of wore off, I think they were happy. I know once she was born, you know, both of them were doting parents. You know, Robbie, you know, absolutely took her as a father. So,
and yes, those friends from her younger years too knew just how much that little baby girl meant to her mom.
You know, I know she was planning on getting married to Robbie. You know, her humor, she was really funny, and she made the joke about carrying Kelsey down the aisle instead of a bouquet, and, you know, what was she going to do when somebody said throw the bouquet, and they'd be surprised that, you know, she'd throw the baby.
With this birth, Robbie and Janelle knew that they had to create two futures now. One for them, yes, but one for their daughter, too. And you're going to recall now that Janelle had that trust fund left to her by the death of her parents that was being overseen and taken care of by her uncle in Florida, Mr. Devine. It was this money that Janelle had become accustomed to receiving in small increments to get by, but she was at a point in her life where she and Robbie both knew it was time for them to plan their next big move. With Robbie's devotion and talents to martial arts, the two decided they were going to open a karate studio by presenting what? A valid business reason in order to come into that money sooner. While we're going to dive into all of that more later, one thing is quite clear. This was their ticket to the rest of their lives. A ticket that would be torn by a brutal double homicide. So, what happened to Robbie Bryant and Janelle Helms? How did their friends come to learn of their brutal, brutal murders? And how did the early investigation shape up? We're finally going to take a deep dive into those very questions. Was a murderer among that gaming group? Had a love interest soured? Or was this murder perhaps much closer to home, committed by someone in the family? All of this and more next time on Classic City Crime. I'm Cameron Jay. Classic City Crime is hosted by me, Cameron Jay. Original design by Kyle Kazaya. Research assistance provided by Elizabeth DeRusso. You can find us online at ClassicCityCrime.com, on Facebook and Instagram at Classic City Crime, and be sure to subscribe now to hear the next episode before it releases to the general public next week. And keep in mind, a portion of proceeds from this podcast production will be donated to Kelsey Bryant, the surviving daughter of Robbie and Janelle. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for your support.